And now, let me take you slightly below the waist, only to your belly. We're not going down any further than that. However, what does yours look like? Or perhaps your fat is deposited lower down on the thighs and the buttocks. Maybe it's a huge problem and always has been in your world. Or maybe it's like the rest of us, the worried well. Bariatric surgery is becoming more and more normalized in that people are looking towards the medical profession to help them control and combat weight-related illnesses and conditions. And joining you in the studio is Professor Wendy Brown. She's the clinical lead of the Bariatric Surgery Registry. She's also the chair of surgery at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, director of the Centre for Obesity Research and Education, my all-round favourite person. Good morning to you, Wendy.
Good morning, Libby.
Interesting, isn't it, the whole notion that obesity, being overweight, can be a foundation plank for so many other conditions that can kind of lead you off the rails in the middle part of life.
Absolutely. Probably obesity is our biggest health concern in the community today. About 28% of Australians now suffer from obesity or struggle with obesity, and that has really major implications on their health. If we could help them control their weight, we'd see so much improvement in health and well-being, and people would just feel so much better. Weight relates to so many diseases. You probably think about things like diabetes and high blood pressure and heart disease, but it's now the number one cause of infertility.
Really?
It's the number one cause of liver failure.
Is it?
Yeah, so it's become, as we go on and as we get better at treating other diseases, the diseases related to obesity are becoming more and more important.
But when you resort to surgery, and I use that verb under notice, because it's kind of like a pejorative verb, isn't it? Resort.
Yeah.
As distinct from something that has less judgment in there, like utilise.
Mm.
There seems to be still some sort of judgment that you're cheating, that you can't do it yourself, or actually, if we look at the body and the human condition, can the body sometimes just lose the ability to send signals to say you're full and signals to self-regulate?
Losing weight is probably one of the hardest things for anyone to do. The best thing you can do in life is never put weight on, and so that's why it's really important that we work with our children and make sure they don't put weight on. But once you've put weight on, your body sees fat as an energy source. So in the olden days when we didn't have a reliable food source, when we had to forage for our food, where we had to got put on boats for 6 months and sent to Australia, if you didn't need very much food, then you were a survivor. So we're geared towards maintaining our fat mass because in evolutionary terms, fat's good. It's an energy source. So once you've put on weight, your body defends that fat mass vigorously. It's really hard to lose weight.
Fat is your friend, according to your body.
In evolutionary terms, definitely your friend. But historically, we didn't have the opportunity to hold on to the fat because a famine always came. There was always a time when we didn't have a constant food source.
But now Coles is never closed.
Coles is never closed. And you don't even have to walk to Coles to get the food. It'll be delivered to your door.
Mm.
So
it's almost like a pusher, isn't it? We live in an environment where there are food pushers.
Exactly. And we're just genetically not geared for that. I don't know if you've ever had gastro and lost weight really quickly.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
But then when your appetite comes back, it comes back with a bang and you just can't control it. You feel like eating all the time. That's your body trying to restore those energy stores within your body.
So this is the set weight.
Your set weight point. So therefore, it's really unfair because this is true for 97% of people. Only 3% of people can fight weight and keep it off. And they're basically the obsessive compulsives in the community, the people who exercise daily, weigh themselves daily, have a disaster plan for the days that they've put on even half a kilo and starve themselves on those days.
And measure their food.
And measure their food and only eat sort of 800 to 1,000 calories, which is basically two little entree-sized plates of food a day. And that's just not feasible for most people. So for 97% of people, they struggle to keep the weight off because they're fighting hunger. And hunger's a really, really primitive instinct. You know, if you're hungry and you're at a restaurant and someone puts a bread basket in front of you, I really challenge you not to eat it. So it's really unfair to judge people. And over the years in this community, we see obesity related to gluttony and we use
laziness.
Judgmental terms, laziness, it's resort. A moral failing.
Yeah.
And so you have to resort to surgery. I see the patients who choose to have surgery, the people who come and see me, as the bravest people I know because they're fighting societal stigma to come and have the surgery, but also they're willing to take the risks of the surgery and they're willing to undertake a procedure that's not a quick fix, it's just a tool. Any of the procedures we do really just help people fight that hunger. eater and limit themselves to those two little entree meals a day, which is all their body needs. It's just a tool for helping them to fight nature, basically.
Are you going to take me down the gullet now? Come on, let's talk about it. The procedure. I want to know what you do. I want to... If you were operating on me, tell me what you would do.
Well, there's three different types of procedures that are commonly done.
Yep.
There's the gastric band, which is a wee device that we fit just below where the stomach joins the esophagus. So your esophagus is the tube that joins your mouth to your stomach, and your stomach sits high up under your ribs in your abdomen. And so if you imagine about 2 centimetres below where the gullet or the esophagus joins into the stomach, we pop a little band there.
What's the difference between the gullet and the esophagus?
Or they're the same thing.
It's the same thing?
Yeah, so the esophagus, the gullet's the lay term for the esophagus.
Okay.
So your esophagus is that tube and it joins into the stomach, and about 2 centimetres below where it joins, we pop this little band, which is lined by a balloon, and we can make that balloon tighter or looser. And what that does is stop food just flowing freely into the stomach. It means your esophagus has to push. Instead of one, your esophagus is a bit like a wriggly worm. It wriggles the food down. And instead of having like a snake, and instead of just snaking it down in one squeeze, it takes 4 or 5 squeezes to push that food past the band. And that kind of tricks the body into believing you've had 4 or 5 bites rather than one bite.
Because each squeeze
triggers some nerve endings that feed back to the brain saying, oh, I'm full. These are the nerves that are only usually triggered when you've had a ginormous feast.
Right.
So we're making them get triggered a bit earlier.
Right.
So it's really important when people have had this surgery that they come back regularly for follow-up. They learn to eat slowly and chew their food, because each mouthful takes about a minute to go past that band. And it's that slowness of food trafficking through the band that sends the full feeling.
So does the nerve endings, do they happen in the esophagus or in the stomach? Because I remember Michael Mosley told us that the stomach, the membrane of the stomach, the lining is the same as what's in the brain, the gut. Was the gut the stomach?
No, the gut's part of the stomach. So the nerve endings are just at that joining point between the esophagus and the stomach. And if you imagine, if you're filling your stomach up from the bottom, they don't get triggered at the top until you stretch them. So we're stretching them early.
Could you have stretched your stomach so that you need more to reach those things?
Not usually. That's uncommon. People can, I suppose, in extreme circumstances, but you can continually overeat and dull them, I guess. The other operation that we do is the sleeve gastrectomy, which is the other common one. And in that one, we actually remove 80 to 90% of your stomach.
I find that really scary.
And a lot of people do, but other people say, well, look, if my appendix was causing me problems, I'd have it out. So I guess they look at it differently,
of course.
And that's why it's good that we have different operations for different people, because different people value and can deal with different things. And in this procedure, we change the shape of the stomach from being like a kidney bean to being a little skinny tube. And so food, again, has to be pushed a bit harder by the esophagus. So those same nerves at the top of the stomach have to work a bit harder to push. But instead of food being
to get it in, there's not as much room.
Exactly. And instead of food sitting in like the lake of the stomach, it sort of ends up running through like a little hose. So it hits the first part of the gut called the duodenum first, and that makes some hormones that make you feel full get switched on quicker. And also we remove a part of the stomach that produces a hormone called ghrelin.
That's the hunger
hormone. And that's the hunger hormone.
But what about the leptin, which is the satiated hormone? Does that come out? I'm always wary about these things to take out the hormones, because maybe you're taking out other ones as well.
And that's something, leptin seems to stay the same, but one of the impacts of having ghrelin taken away is that your mood centre and your appetite centre in the brain sit very close to each other.
Right.
And so some people, after we do a sleeve gastrectomy, particularly if they're prone to mood disorders like depression or anxiety, can feel very labile afterwards, because...
What does that mean, labile?
They can feel very insecure and a bit unstable. Their mood can really be affected, because when we reduce that hormone, it also has an effect on their mood centre.
Right. Oh, they're tricky, aren't they, hormones?
Yeah, these hormones. And that one of your questions earlier, is there times in life that we struggle more with our weight? Well, one of the times in life that we do struggle more with our weight is around puberty, and for women, around the perimenopause, because our body starts to shift and the hormones that we've got that help us with our reproductivity that we don't have after we go through menopause also have an effect on our weight, our set point.
Blokes, do their Does their weight, is their weight as affected by age?
No, not as much as us, but testosterone levels dropping does have an effect on weight, but just not as profound as in women. But the thing with men is that their whole life they're at more risk from their weight because they carry it around, men carry it around their waist. Belly. And that's a more unhealthy place to deposit fat because it pushes on your organs.
Shall we open up the phone lines? Do you want to take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, let's give Dr. Wendy Brown, Professor Wendy Brown, the full Sunday morning experience. I've got a lovely blank board of calls at the moment. Everyone's fascinated with what you're talking about. But should you have a question about bariatric surgery? We've only done the two versions, haven't we? What's the third?
The third one is the bypass. And in that procedure, we divide the stomach, we divide the bowel, and we bring the bowel up onto a very small nubbin of stomach that's about the size of a walnut, so that people really can't eat very much. But the food now does not go through the duodenum, that first part of the gut that I was talking about, where a lot of the hormones that induce satiety are produced. And that then affects the production of those hormones, so people again feel less hungry. And it also has an effect, we don't really understand why, quite a profound effect on diabetes for that reason as well.
Professor Wendy Brown is the clinical lead of the Bariatric Surgery Registry, Chair of Surgery at the Alfred Hospital. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Libby.
Are you ready to meet your people?
Love to.
Excellent. Darren, you're good. You're off. You're ready. Off you go.
Well, thank you very much, Libby. Look, I'm booked in to have the sleeve on January next year.
Wow.
I'm type 2 diabetes and I'm just wondering, I'm not asking you to give an opinion against what I've been advised by my surgeon, but I'm just wondering, I've suggested, well, the sleeve was suggested for me because I plan to spend my retiring years on a yacht. And the surgeon seemed to think that the sleeve is less likely to have any complications long. But, you know, I'd like to cure diabetes at the same time if I could. So I'm just wondering if I'm getting down the right path.
You know, Darren, Wendy and I were just talking about this before your call came through and I had no indication that this was the question you were going to ask. The choice between the sleeve and the bypass, essentially that's what you're asking. Is it the right fork in the road for you to take? Is that right?
Yes. Well, given the two criteria, one is that I'm type 2 diabetic, insulin dependent, and secondly, I would love to be floating around in the middle of the Pacific in my retirement years.
What do you think, Wen?
Well, both of them have a very good effect on diabetes. And so if you lose a lot of weight with your sleeve, which I'm sure you will see a major improvement in your diabetes. That's what all the studies would show. Now, the effect may be a little bit more powerful with the bypass, but that has to be balanced up against the operative risk, which is a little bit higher. But as your surgeon said, there are some longer-term risks with dividing the bowel and rerouting it in terms of bowel obstructions and ulcers and just a few other different things, nutritional issues. And so, whereas with the sleeve, the main long-term problem is that about 30% of people do get quite bad heartburn or reflux, and then that can lead to an issue with something called Barrett's esophagus, which is a bit of a change of the cells of the lower esophagus that, left unchecked, can go to cancer in very rare cases. But just means you need to be checked up every couple of years with a camera down your throat to look at it, a bit like a lady having a pap smear, because we can scrape the abnormal cells away if we find it early. So your doctor's done the right thing, I think, talking to you and saying, well,
about lifestyle.
This is what's important to you, your diabetes, but you want to live on a yacht. And I tend to agree that probably living with a sleeve is going to be a lot easier than living with a bypass if you're floating around the Pacific somewhere away from medical help.
You lucky duck. You're going to look fabulous in your togs and everything, Darren.
Thank you.
Yeah. I could hear you giggling at the thought of that. Good luck.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. Sarah is next. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you so much for putting something like this on the radio.
Our pleasure. You know we love doing it.
Yeah. Look, I'm literally just on my way down to Melbourne. I live in Bendigo to speak at the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival. And I'm talking about nutrition. And I'm really interested in hearing about what you would do for lifestyle counselling, lifestyle support. So I heard on the other listener, the doctor's talking about what he wants to do for his lifestyle. But and I have a history of anorexia and bulimia, and I always talk about what's your drug of choice. So my drug of choice was about regurgitating and restriction, and I could easily have swung either way. So I look at obesity very similarly. But I know that even though I'm recovered, or I think you're always recovering, I still have those lingering feelings, and those, and when you're in society and you want to eat food, and you said before about, you know, that gluttony approach and food's in front of you, and could you actually resist eating that bread basket? How do you support someone after they've had surgery or pre-surgery to keep this going as a lifestyle support?
So how do you reconcile the errant mind with the science procedure?
This is what I'm talking about, yeah. Absolutely.
Wendy?
Yep.
And that's a really brilliant question, very insightful. We see all of these surgeries as a tool. They're just a tool to help you control the physiology that makes you hungry. But people eat for lots of reasons. We don't just eat because we're hungry. We eat to celebrate, we eat to commiserate, we eat to resolve stress. You name it, there's reasons that we eat. And so therefore, when you have bariatric surgery, it needs to be done in the context of a chronic disease. So obesity is a chronic disease, meaning it's a disease that affects you for your life. And like any other disease that affects you for your life, like heart disease or high blood pressure or diabetes, you need to get care after the surgery from what we call a multidisciplinary team. So a team that has doctors, nurses, psychologists, dietitians, the whole crew that needs to be there to help you if you are struggling. Because sometimes people feel a great sense of loss when they can only go out to dinner and eat a little entree-sized food or eat some tapas when everybody else is eating an enormous meal.
I'd feel like I'd conquered the world.
Yeah, everyone's different though, and some people do feel this amazing amount of loss. Some people feel delighted and it's the best thing ever and they don't need to see a psychologist, but some people really need to work with a cognitive behavioural therapist perhaps to look at different trigger controls. Some people need to look at, you know, controlling all the medical comorbidities that come with weight loss. Sometimes there can be major effects on people's relationships because as they lose weight, their partner starts to feel threatened and so they start sabotaging. Yeah, they start sabotaging the process.
Have you seen those, feeders?
The feeders, And it's real. And that can be very destructive to relationships. And sometimes people themselves feel very exposed when they lose weight because maybe they've been abused as children and suddenly they've lost their fat doona that's been protecting them. So all of these surgeries, I strongly believe, need to be done in the context of proper aftercare that involves whatever healthcare professionals that person individually needs.
It's 28 minutes past 10 o'clock. Good morning. You're on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. My name is Libby Gore, your guest, Professor Wendy Brown. We're talking about bariatric surgery and Andrew has called. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Libby.
Your turn.
Yeah, I'm just ringing. I had the surgery about 8 years ago. I had the sleeve. I'd previously had a heart attack and given up smoking and put on a massive amount of weight, you know, the usual sort of things that happened there. But my biggest concern was the diabetes type 2 that I had. It got out of control. And the surgeon that I spoke to actually discussed the surgery in terms of the type 2 diabetes. That was my primary concern. And I had the surgery. It took me about 12 months to make up my mind. I looked into it, talked to various professionals, went in, had it. The impact on my diabetes was almost immediate. Within a couple of days, I'd gone down from readings of around the 16, 17, 18 mark down to fives and sixes and ultimately down into the fours.
Outrageous.
It was, and I mean, I was on all sorts of medication. I now take no medication whatsoever. My sugar levels sit at around the 4.5, 4.6.
So, Andrew, in terms of anecdotally then, in terms of things that you've done for yourself to, you know, proactive steps you've taken to make life a bit better, where does it sit?
Oh, it's number one. Yeah, I honestly do not believe that I would be alive today if I hadn't done it.
Well, congratulations. You've done very well and you've obviously worked hard at it as well because it's not easy and there's lots of things that you need to change. We do see this quite profound change in sugars often because in the first couple of weeks after the surgery, particularly with the sleeves and the bypasses, you really can't eat very much at all because of the swelling and you're on a liquid diet and so forth. So that is reasonably common to see that early effect. But it's the long-term eight-year effect that's probably more important and you should be really proud of what you've achieved.
Jerry has called from Poowong East. Hello, Jerry.
Good morning, Libby and Wendy. Thanks for raising this topic. I had a duodenal switch with a gastric reduction back in 2002. and was one of the first people to actually have a duodenal switch in Australia, and it changed my life.
Really?
It was just incredible. So I didn't know I had type 2 diabetes. They found that out when I checked into the hospital. I didn't know I had sleep apnea. I weighed about 140 kilos at 5'11".
Mm.
Had the full duodenal switch, and then pretty much lost a kilo a day for the first 3 weeks.
Wow.
Lost a total of 50-odd kilos, which is a hell of a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And it's
change
just
your,
been
did
amazing.
It change your relationships, Jerry?
It changed...
Or your relationship with the world more.
It changed my relationship with the world.
With being alive. Yeah,
absolutely being alive. But it also just helped my confidence. And it was just, a life-changing experience. It was quite amazing. There were side effects. So you don't absorb fat-soluble vitamins, for example. So I have to take a range of multivitamins. And vitamin D and calcium and things like that. But that's just part of the day-to-day life now, and it isn't an issue whatsoever.
Good story, Jerry. That must make you feel good.
And the duodenal switch is another operation. It's a bit more severe, so you do have to make sure you get good follow-up.
I could see that on your face, that it's a big deal, that one.
Yeah.
I got a text. Libby, a friend went through both procedures and is since heavier than before surgery. She changed her eating habits to one of very sugary mini-dose snack foods. So aftercare must be considered. After 8 years, my friend can hardly stand up. So can the brain trick yourself around it? Like, can you sabotage yourself? Even though you've got this tool, can your brain think, I like to eat for comfort, I'm going to have Freddo frogs now and a small bag of twisties, and another one 20 minutes later.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we talk about all this physiology and we can change hunger, but we're human beings, and human beings have a will and a frontal lobe that can override any instinct. And that's why I was saying before, you know, if people are sabotaging themselves, and that's often by taking things like ice cream or sugary foods because they slide through very easily. There's not an operation in the world that I can do that will overcome a diet of chips and chocolates and lollies. We can't strap around a band around your stomach or remove your stomach and magically you can go to McDonald's and eat whatever you want. Life isn't like that. You can't eat those kind of foods. And so I'm sorry to hear that people are having those experiences. And if they are, they should be working with their treating team to look at what their trigger controls are, what they can do, and how they can help them to change their diet and go back to eating much more healthier foods.
So you've still got to take responsibility. It's not about abrogating responsibility to a band or a doctor.
They're just a tool. They're just a tool. And it needs to be a teamwork between ourselves as treating clinicians, the patient, and that tool, that operation that they've chosen.
Mel wants to talk to you. Hi, Mel.
Hi, how are you?
We're good, thank you.
I'm a tooth surgeon patient. I've had the band back in 2010, and I then had the band out in 2016 and had the bypass done because the band didn't work for me. My question is regarding, like, because the duodenum is no longer attached, the absorption rate of medication, how does that factor into it?
Well, it depends which medications, but you will have, after a bypass, you do need to work very closely with your other doctors to make sure you've got the doses right, because the depending on how long, there's a few technical things that we do when we do a bypass where we measure out the bowel, and you just want to be sure that you're on the right dose of different medications and they're going to be absorbed properly after the surgery.
Okay.
So keep talking to them. Keep asking questions.
Yeah, well, we've been doing that. We've changed a lot of medications because when I had the bypass done initially, I lost 30 kilos and then they put me back on all the medication and I put the weight back on, and I've now changed medications again, and in the last 5 weeks I've dropped 17 kilos again.
So, well done.
Yeah, so the doctors and that don't know the ins and outs of the bariatric surgery, so, you know, it's hard when you can't get into a specialist all the time.
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. It was just, yeah.
Sounds like you're going well, though, now, Jess.
Yeah, I'm on the right path now.
Good.
We heard it on the radio. I thought, I'll ring up and ask whether or not they know anything about it.
Well, thank you, Mel, for your call. I'm going to take Jessie's call now because we're running out of time. I'm so sorry to everybody, but Jessie's got a really interesting query. Hello.
Hi, Vidi and Libby. My name is Jessie. My son is 16-year-old. And he's putting up a lot of weight. He's on metformin as well, so 2,500 mg. We wanted to ask the doctor if what's the right range to get the gastric band or the other surgeries.
It's difficult. We did a study a few years ago in adolescents in conjunction with the Royal Children's Hospitals, and the children did very well with gastric bands. They were from 14 to 16 years of age, but longer term, there were a few issues with behaviours, and some of them have done brilliantly. Others have struggled with it. So it really comes down to the adolescent and how mature they are. We like them to have achieved bone maturity, so we like them to have grown as to where they're supposed to grow to before we operate, because we don't want to do anything to stunt their growth by reducing the amount they're eating.
He's a big boy. He's like 5'11 and 120 kg.
Yeah,
he was on 110 when 100 kg when he was put on metformin.
Yeah,
and then it has it stopped a little bit. The weight increase stopped for a while, and then after that, it started again.
And it also depends on their ability to sort of commit to an aftercare program, because it's sort of the role of an adolescent to challenge and to defy rules. And if they've had these surgeries, we really don't want them going off on a tangent and defying these rules. Yeah.
Jessie, I think more investigation is needed on your behalf. If people are interested in bariatric surgery, whether it be the sleeve or the band, how can they empower themselves with information, Wendy?
Well, there is a lot on the internet, but I'd be very careful of the chat rooms, because a lot of the chat rooms contain a lot of false information, and it seems to me zealots either way tend to be the ones that dominate them. But Anne Smoss, the Australian and New Zealand Metabolic and Obesity Surgery Society, does have a very good website with information about the different bariatric procedures, as does the International Federation for Surgery of Obesity, or IFSO. So they're good starting points to get some good information about the procedures. Obviously, speak to your GP. GPs now have an increasing awareness of this procedure, and they can arrange a referral to a specialist in your area if you think it's appropriate.
Your guest this morning, speaking about bariatric surgery, Professor Wendy Brown, who is the Director of the Centre for Obesity Research and Education, Chair of Surgery at the Alfred in Melbourne, and the Clinical Lead of the Bariatric Surgery Registry. A very fulsome session, Wendy.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
You won't like this particular text. Thank you, Libby. Your discussion reminded me that I had a bag of lollies in my glove box, which I have promptly devoured. Caroline, driving to Healesville.
Hope you enjoyed them, Caroline.
Hope you enjoyed them, Caroline.